Welcome back, or welcome to, the Single Track Podcast. I am your host, Finn Melanson. This episode is the first in a series we are calling Golden Ticket Talks, where we interview the first and second place male and female finishers at each of the 2022 Golden Ticket races. First up is the Bandera 100K, which took place earlier this January. And in this episode, we talk with first place finisher Marianne Hogan, who is based in Montreal, Canada, and runs for Salomon. In addition to the recap of her race at Bandera and her initial thoughts on Western States, we talk about the trail running scene in Quebec, her work as a guide for a Paralympic athlete at the Tokyo Games, her history in the sport, including a four-year stretch of injury that led to a triumphant return this past fall at Ultra Trail Cape Town, and more. I love seeing athletes like Marianne from the East Coast of North America shine. It was great to get to know her, and I think she will definitely be a top competitor at Western States in June. Let's get started. Marianne Hogan, welcome to the Single Track Podcast.
Thank you so much for having me. It's a pleasure to be here.
I should also say congrats on the golden ticket at Bandera 100K. That's hot off the press. I think we're recording this on Tuesday, January 11th. So just 4 days ago, what are your initial thoughts and feelings?
Listen, I'm smiling, I think, as much as I was during the race. It was a really good race. It was a lot of fun, and I'm still very happy from the results. So things are looking good here.
We were talking offline, and I had asked you if you'd been on any podcasts in the trail running scene, and you'd mentioned a couple back in your home base in the Quebec area, Montreal. But it might be the case that listeners in the American audience, they might not be familiar with you. So I think it's fair to dive into your background a bit. How did you get into trail running?
Yeah, it's a good question. So I started trail running actually officially, I think maybe 4 or 5 years ago. I moved to Boulder after I graduated from San Diego State University, where I ran collegiate track and field. I ran the 10K there at the SDSU. And so when I graduated, it was kind of I was really ready to get away from the pace, you know, like the track workouts and the pacing and all of that. And I really, really enjoyed running still, but I kind of wanted to get away from any type of very formal training program. And so I moved to Boulder, Colorado, where I kind of really fell in love with the running community. I got involved with the Rocky Mountain Runners in Boulder, and that's really where I started trail running.
Nice. And again, doing research for the show, I like to check out the various people that we interview on Ultra Sign Up. And it looks like you kind of got off to the races, did a ton of stuff up until 2017. There was a fairly long gap between 2017 and 2021. And I'm just curious, what accounted for that gap? Did you get really into it and then step away from the sport?
Yeah, some unforeseen circumstances kind of arrived. So what happened is I moved back from Boulder to Canada. I'm originally from Quebec. And I had my visa was expiring in July of 2017. So that's kind of when I moved back to Quebec, and I didn't really have a job. And so at first, when I moved back to Montreal, I was kind of really, really excited about running and really wanted to get into it. And actually pretty quickly after I moved back, I got a first stress fracture, which kind of slowed down my progression. And then shortly thereafter, a couple of months after, actually during that summer, that first summer where I was back in Quebec, I had a really bad trail spill. I got my ankle, I twisted my ankle, and I got caught in the root, and I spiral fractured my tibia and my fibula. And so I needed to get surgery, and I had surgery, which put in two plates and four screws in my right leg. And, you know, as much as I wanted to come back from that very quickly, it took a lot longer than I ever would have expected. And so that's kind of what slowed down my return in the trail running community.
Well, it brings to mind Hillary Allen. We just had her on the podcast about a week ago. Haven't published the episode yet, but when I think of people who have overcome traumatic injuries and have had a long rehabilitation process, and then they've come back to the trails with, you know, just as much, if not more success, she comes to mind. And it sounds like you had a similar experience because you were out of the game for 4 years. And I think we'll talk about it in a second, but like you just had a great race at Ultra Trail Harikana, at Cape Town, now at Bandera. What did you learn in that recovery process? And what did you apply from those 4 years to what you're doing right now?
I think that, you know, when you're going through, if you have a passion that is as strong as trail running and you're unable to do it for such a long time, I think you develop a really big fire. It's very kind of corny to say, but I think it's really true. I was so excited, you know, now when I get to a start line, I'm just so excited to be there and I don't really care about the outcome. Like I just have such a good time running the race and it's just such a privilege for me to be able to show up to the race and be in a position to complete it. I think that there's no distance that I ever take for granted, because when I first broke my leg, you know, I wasn't able to run for at least 6 months. And the first time I ran, like I could barely run a kilometer. So it's just something that I guess kind of really gave me it really kind of built my passion for trail running even more.
This is a question that I asked Hillary and I'll ask you as well. Did you believe the whole time during the duration of that recovery that you were going to come back as strong, if not stronger, as an athlete?
I definitely believed in the idea of it. I think that concretely, sometimes there's some moments where it's really difficult to kind of imagine yourself being back exactly where you were, because it does have really big impact. And obviously, my injury was much smaller than Hillary Allen, but my right leg, for example, is still much smaller than my left leg. Okay. My right calf is just like it'll never get back to the same level as my left one, and that's just a new reality that I live with. But I do think that it really fueled my passion and my desire to go out and run my best race. And I think that if anything, that's more important than having, a strong right calf. So I think it kind of helps at the same time.
Very cool. Well, and I promise to listeners, we will get to the Bandera recap, but I'm fascinated by your background and I have a couple more questions.
Yeah, go for it.
The vast majority of our audience is based in the Mountain West area of the United States, California, Oregon, Washington, Utah, Colorado, that area. Not as many folks are from the East Coast or up in your neck of the woods, Quebec. Mm-hmm. I think that they would be fascinated to know what that trail running scene is like, who you train with, where you run, just the whole scene, like what races exist there, stuff like that. Because it's kind of a black box to a fair amount of us.
Yeah, definitely. The trails in Quebec are actually very challenging. I know that a couple of West Coasters have come out and ran Ultra Trail Aricana, which happens early September. And it's a very challenging course in the sense that it's very technical. There's a lot of roots, there's a lot of rocks, and it makes it much different than any West Coast trail. I lived in Boulder for a total of 3 years. So I ran the trails there, and they're very, you know, they're nice trails. They're super technical, but nothing compares to the East Coast with all the roots, the leaves and the rocks. And I think that makes it a really nice scene actually, because then when you go out internationally, any type of courses just doesn't look as, or doesn't seem as technical as the trails back home. So I think it kind of gives you a very solid base, and anyone training in Quebec kind of benefits from that for sure.
Cool.
I said Quebec, but also I think the rest of the East Coast as well, you know, like Vermont, the Adirondacks are kind of similar as well.
Oh yeah. Well, for additional context, I grew up in a place called Portland, Maine, and it's actually
oh,
only
nice.
About 4 hours south of the Harikana course. And I can attest to all of that. I mean, one of my personal missions is to make people aware of the White Mountains in New Hampshire and the Green Mountains in Vermont, because to me, they're the closest thing that we have in this part of the world to like the Alps over in France. Just the way the alpine looks, the technical nature of the terrain. It's very cool in my opinion.
Yeah, they're really nice trails actually. They're different. They're super technical. And, you know, you never get super super high, but there's always a lot of elevation in the courses you've done. There's some really nice loops to do in that neck of the woods for sure.
Who do you train with there? Do you have training partners or a club you run with, or are you mostly solo?
No, there's a lot of it's really easy to find trail runners in Quebec. Actually, the trail running scene has grown tremendously in Quebec. Obviously, COVID has kind of has slowed things down, but it's still very easy to find some people to run with. My boyfriend, Jean-François Cochon, he was actually doing Bandera this week as well. He's someone that I really train with on a daily or weekly basis. It's really good to kind of share your passion with someone for sure. But I have a good group of friends with whom I do a lot of training with, mostly on the weekends. You know, my favorite thing to do on the weekend is just kind of disconnect from reality and just kind of go out in the woods for the entire day, and whoever I can share those days with, I will. There's just a lot of people to run with for sure. It's very seldom that I will go on an adventure on the weekend by myself.
The last question I have on this front is about how you cope with the winter season there. I think one of the blessings on the West Coast and even in the Mountain West is you can really trail run year round. And I think that's one of the reasons why the sport has taken off here. My understanding is that the winters get really harsh, especially from like November to even early April. Are you doing cross training during those months, or are you running year round no matter what?
I do a lot more cross training, and it's actually pretty good to have those winters to kind of slow us down. Because as I mentioned when we were talking offline earlier, I'm kind of one of the type of people who will go as much as I can, as often as I can. And I think that if I were to do so 12 months of the year, if the weather would allow me, I think that I would definitely overdo it. And I have enough experience to recognize that in myself. And so what I really enjoy in the winter months in Quebec. I'm a split boarder, so kind of similar to Skimo, but kind of the snowboarding version of it. So I do a lot of split boarding over the weekends. That's pretty much all I do. So I kind of put my running shoes aside and I just split board all winter long, which is part of the reason why I'm happy that everything went well at Bandera this weekend, so that I can just kind of enjoy split boarding for the next couple of weeks or months.
So one other thing I wanted to talk about before we get into Bandera, and I promise we're going to get there, is you had you had a fantastic race at Ultra Trail Cape Town. You came in second to the great Courtney DeWalter, mm-hmm. who everyone knows. That was only, 6 or 7 weeks ago? And it's impressive to me that you were able to recover from that great performance, podium finish, and then snag a golden ticket at Bandera. So maybe just talk a bit about how you prepared for that race and then how you were able to basically recover and put up another great performance at Bandera.
Yeah, that's a good question. So I had a good 6 weeks between the both events. And because earlier in the season, I was focusing on other stuff. I was actually a guide for a Paralympic triathlete. And so that's kind of what I did up until August when Tokyo Paralympics happened. And so I was able to kind of push my season a little bit further down than everybody else. I would assume like the vast majority of people would have their peak season kind of more in the summer months. And so I decided to kind of push all of that a couple months, and I raced Ultra Trail Aricana early September. That was kind of like my entry in the trail running scene this year. And then I was able to kind of prepare and really build up my mileage for UTCT. Felt really good at UTCT, but I think that I felt even better at Bandera. I think that it was just kind of like a good building stone for Bandera. It was just everything just went very smoothly. I took a week completely off of running after UTCT, but then immediately started building back up for Bandera. So I'm pretty happy that went well.
Very cool. Well, let's finally dig into it. First, how did you choose Bandera? I'm guessing that the mission was to get a golden ticket, but you could have chosen canyons. You could have chosen Black Canyon. I know we've added a bunch of other races to that series. What appealed to you?
Good question. But actually, the answer is pretty simple. I had made it kind of my goal in 2022 to qualify for Western States, and I was determined to do whatever it takes to get there. And so I'm actually registered to all three of those golden ticket races in the US. So I'm registered to Bandera, Black Canyon, and the Canyons. I figured if Bandera wasn't going to cut it, then I'd have another shot. And if Black Canyon wasn't going to cut it, then I was going to have another shot at the canyons. So that's kind of how I planned that. I know and understand that a lot of people would say that that's too much and too much racing, too much volume. But I also think that, you know, when you're away from the sport for 4 years and you're finally in a position to mm-hmm. be able to race and to be able to put yourself out there, I just wanted to put all of the shots and kind of in my, or put the possibility or probability of me qualifying, yeah, the highest as possible. So I started with Bandera and it turned out to be really good. So.
Oh no, that's really cool. I'm fascinated. It's so enjoyable, I should say, to watch athletes just make qualifying for Western States their mission. An athlete that comes to mind, I think last year was Emily Haugood. I think she's based in Zimbabwe in Africa somewhere. But I think she ran every single one of the ticket races in 2021 and finally got a ticket at Canyons like 6 weeks before the race.
Yeah, that's great.
You made it less interesting. You took care of business right at the top, but yeah. It is fun to see athletes do that. What the next question I have is, Ultra Trail Cape Town is a far different course than the Bandera course. And I'm guessing it requires different types of fitness. How were you able to switch gears between two totally different courses and have the same amount of success in such a short period of time?
Yeah, that's a really good question, actually. So before, prior to going to UTCT, I focused a lot more on running and trails, and I did a lot of uphill running. That was really my focus, because none of those are actually, well, I'd say that I'm a pretty average in all types of trail running. You know, I'm not like extremely good at technical. I'm not extremely good at anything that's fast. I'm kind of average in everything. And so I knew that UTCT was a pretty technical with a lot of uphill running, which was kind of the things that I really wanted to work on the most. And so the weeks leading up to it and the months leading up to it, that's really all I did, focus on elevation gain and technical running. And then as soon as UTCT was done, I actually went to Mexico for 2 weeks and just ran flats. I just ran on the streets. I just ran. I felt like Bandera is going to be one of those courses where you were going to be able to run the whole time. And I just wanted to kind of get my running legs back. So that's all I did for 2 weeks. And I took a week off, 2 weeks of flat running, and then I kind of tapered down to Bandera. So that's kind of what the process was like.
And then what was your strategy going in? Because correct me if I'm wrong, but you led the race from start to finish, right?
Yeah, definitely. I'm one of those people who, you know, if I have a goal, I think I like to make it as easiest as possible. And there's nothing in the sense of like, it's just simple, right? Like if I'm in first position, then I'm in a position to have the golden ticket. And I'm kind of in control of if I keep that first position, because if someone tries to pass me, then I just try to accelerate. And so I know it's very basic, kind of basic trail running strategy, but for me it just works, because I was like, oh, if I just go in first position, then all I have to do is try to keep that first position, and if everything goes well, then I'll be good to go and first and second, right? So that's kind of the strategy that I had. So right at the start, I noticed that there was a couple of girls ahead of me after like 500 meters, and I just decided to go in front of them and made things easy, and then I just kept that first position, I guess.
That's fascinating. So you didn't have any pre-race splits in mind. No matter who was racing that day, you were going to make sure that you were ahead of them and fate was going to play out.
Yeah, that's usually how I run my races. I know that probably eventually the more that I do, the more that I race and the more competition I'll have, the more that I'll have to modify that strategy. But to me, it's a simple process, right? It's just easy to kind of to monitor your own pace if you're in control of it. So
the next question there, are you going to race that same way at Western States? Like, can we expect you the first person to crest that first climb there?
It's funny, because my friends after the race, when they were saying like, yeah, that's probably something that you would have to revisit for Western States. And I do think that I will try to revisit that strategy. But I think I realistically, like I don't think that, I mean, I'm going to do my best and deliver the best performance I can on race day, but also the goal isn't the same, right? Like the goal for Bandera 100 Cray was to get the top two. Yeah. And then in the goal at Western States, I don't realistically, like, I don't know that I'm going to definitely go from the get-go for the top two. I'm going to have a different goal for it, and it's just going to look differently. But in terms of that goal, it's going to be a similar strategy for sure.
And obviously Western States is 5 or 6 months away. So it's a far, far ways off. There's a lot of training to be done. There's a lot of thinking to be done. Are there any goals for that race that are currently at the forefront of your mind that you're willing to share?
Very humbly so, I'd like to say that I would like to maintain a position for next year. You know, I would like to not worry about it. So top 10, I think, would be a pretty realistic goal for me, and or challenging and exciting goal for me, actually.
Very cool.
I think that's what I would go for.
What are the next 5 to 6 months going to look like for you? I'm guessing that you're not going to race Black Canyon or Canyon 100K. Give us a picture of what the next 4 to 5 months of training is going to look like.
Yeah, I'm probably not going to run a Black Canyon. Actually, I will not run. That's more of a statement than a probably. Just because it's a very quick turnaround, and I want to make sure that I give my body the opportunity to rest. I've raced 300Ks and over distance in the last 5 months, and that's more than I haven't run. The longest I had run before this year was 92K. So I think that I I need to give my body the time to rest. And that's what I'm going to give it to the next 6 weeks. I'm just going to dedicate it to some resting. Obviously, I'm going to keep running, but also do other sports, like I mentioned, splitboarding and things like that. Canyons, on the other hand, I think would be a very interesting way to kind of get out there and see the course and also have a good time, right? Like, I think that it would be nice to go out and run with some really fun people. I know some of the girls that are racing it, and I think that it would just be a good opportunity to kind of get out there and have some fun on some trails. So I think that I probably will go forward with that, even if it's not a necessity anymore. And then it'll kind of be the last big event before Western States.
And will you do that Memorial Day weekend training camp where you cover like the last 70 miles of the Western States course?
Yeah, I think I will too. I think I will take advantage of that. I think that it would be a lot of fun and a good opportunity to see the course, but also, and more importantly, I guess, run with different people within the trail running community. So I think that would be really fun.
So I think I may have missed it earlier, but what race has been your longest time on feet so far to date? Was it Bandera, or have you had longer days leading into Western States?
No, UTHC. So Utah Trail Haritana is 125. And that was my longest race.
And how much time on it was that? What, 14 hours?
No, I actually had a pretty bad ankle sprain at kilometer 80, and that really slowed down my pace. I think I did 16 in some minutes. I don't know. To be honest, I don't remember my time specifically.
That might be a blessing though, because that mirrors maybe a similar time on feet goal for Western States.
Yeah. Yeah. Cool. And it was mostly during the night. So it'll be nice at Western State that it will be during the day.
Yeah. Let's talk a bit about Salomon. So I think you've been supported by Salomon for a bit now. Can you talk about how that relationship started and just how they help facilitate your travel and racing and stuff like that?
Yeah, of course. Salomon, I am really surprised that they stuck with me throughout all those years, and I'm incredibly grateful. I've been injured for the past 4, and it's just so nice to know that they have been there this whole time. So actually, I got involved with Salomon. I was involved as an ambassador, but I got more seriously involved when I joined their Salomon Ultra Trail Running Academy. So it happened in Moab, and they were doing this 5-day training camp. And at the end of the training camp, there was a race behind the rocks, and whoever run that race was going to be sent to Chamonix to run the 80K at Le Marathon du Mont Blanc. And whoever won that race was going to be sent to run the Transalpine, the Gore-Tex Transalpine 7-day event in the Alps. And so that's really where I started with Salomon. And I guess I had a really good summer that 2017 season. And so I won behind the rocks and got sent over to Chamonix. And then I was the first Salomon within that group to finish at Chamonix. So then I was sent to Transalpine where I did that 7-day stage race. So that's kind of how I got involved with them.
That is fascinating and very cool, in my opinion, that despite that stretch of injury that you had, Salomon was still interested in partnering with you. I'm particularly fascinated because it's just the nature of the game that athletes in our sport get injured. Sometimes it's short stints, like 2 weeks. Sometimes it's multi-year. Can you talk a bit about what that relationship looked like during those 4 years and how they just kept believing in you to turn out a year like 2021 and now 2022?
Yeah, it was a really good relationship. Actually, I think that they hit a home run with their running camps. I think that they found some really good athletes throughout those training camps, and it really builds a big connection with the brand. In that training camp, actually, I was with Mathieu Blanchard, who just finished really well at UTMB, who is a prime example of how successful those training camps can be at identifying some talent and kind of growing them within the system. And I think that, you know, both him and I were really attached to Salomon, and to this day, for me, it's grown even more because I'm so grateful that they decided to stick with me through all those years. You know, every year I kept thinking to myself, like, oh, this is it, you know, like this is the end of December. This is it. Like, I'm going to be dropped off. But I never was. And I'm so thankful for it. And for me, it means a whole lot. And, you know, I really, really enjoy running in Salomon shoes, but it means even more to kind of be part of that community and that family. So it makes a huge difference.
You mentioned it earlier in the interview, but you talked about your work with the Paralympics. And for those that are not familiar, talk about what that entails and your level of involvement in recent years.
Yeah, for sure. So what happened was that I broke my leg in 2018. And for a total of 6 months after I broke my leg, I had surgery. I had 2 plates and 14 screws in my right leg. And I really wasn't able to run at all. I think the first few, I broke my leg in August. And I think the first few running steps that I did were in February of the next year. And it was basically just, you know, a combination of 5 steps maybe. And it was just so painful. It really took me a long time to get back from that. Yeah. And prior to trail running, actually, I had been competing in triathlon. I was part of the national junior Canadian team. So I had been to a couple world championships, and the coach of the Paralympic national team right now was one of the athletes on the elite team when I was a junior. And I had friends in the triathlon world still, and they were thinking like, hey, Marianne, this might be a good idea for you to kind of stay in shape, kind of stay involved in sports and cross train and whatnot. And they're looking for a Triathlon Canada was looking for a guide. And so they reached out, and I went out to British Columbia, kind of tested as on the bike, tested on the run, tested on the swim, and kind of got selected to be a guide. And so I joined them in 2019, and kind of signed on to continue until 2020 for Tokyo. But then Tokyo 2020 turned into me Tokyo 2021. And so it kind of changed my plans for 2021. I had envisioned kind of coming back into trail running sooner. But, you know, I had committed to the program, and I had committed to Jessica, who is the blind triathlete for whom I was guiding. And I was really enjoying the time and thought like it felt right to kind of go all the way through Tokyo 2021 with her. So that's kind of what I did. So I was a guide with her for the Paralympics that happened in August, and it was quite the experience.
What have been some of the biggest takeaways from that experience that you've either applied to your own athletic journey or just other areas of life?
I think there's two really big ones. I think that the one that I enjoy the most and I kind of take away is really the importance of communicating. Just importance of communicating. It's really interesting to actually work with a blind triathlete, you know, or a blind person for that matter. You know, because when you're a guide, you're not just a guide when you're racing. I'm a guide, you know, if we go to Tokyo, for example, I'm guiding her through Tokyo, right? I'm not just racing the race with her. So it's really interesting to kind of work with someone so closely and kind of realize how important it is to communicate, you know, the details of life and kind of just get your message across, your point across. And I think that really helped me evolve as a person. But it's also such a great program to be a part of. It's really nice to be part of the Paralympic program and kind of see how positive, you know, if the Paralympics athletes are and they're having a great time and they're making most of their life. And to me, it was a blessing and such a good experience. We got to travel the world together and I'm really grateful that I was able to be part of the program.
And will you do this again for Paris in 2024, or what does the future of this look like for you?
Yeah, it's a little difficult because so all the way leading up to 2021, I definitely prioritized Jessica's racing schedule, you know, made sure that I made myself available for all the qualifying races. We traveled the world. So like I said, it wasn't really easy for me to fit in my own trail running season or my trail running races. And I guess the last couple of years kind of show that. And now that Tokyo is completed, I am very eager to kind of return to my own trail running. So as much as I would like to do everything, to do absolutely everything, I think that I'm lacking the time. And for example, like the first race of the Paralympic season happens the day before Western States, so obviously that wouldn't be yeah. something that I'm able to commit to, and it saddens me. But at the same time, I think that it's a good opportunity for someone else to kind of come ahead and do that job. And I'm still involved in the program. I will still be training with the Paralympic team, and so that kind of allows me to have this in both worlds.
I love having this conversation with guests on the show, and it's about the balance that we strike between running and our professional careers in this sport and anything else we do in our lives. And I'm curious, given all the success that you are having in the sport, is this something that you would ever consider doing full time? Like if Solomon came to you and said, hey, you've just knocked it out of the park these past couple races and your future's bright. We want you to be full time in the same way that like Courtney runs full time. What would you say to that? Is that attractive to you? Or do you like that split between like, I have a life over here and then I have this running life?
I think on paper and in theory, it sounds very attractive and you're talking to me about it and I get super excited. But in the past, I think, so I'm definitely someone who's very intense and who will spend every spare moment running or training or, you know, doing everything that I can to kind of better myself and kind of get out there and enjoy the outdoors. And I think that if I had 24/7 to dedicate to that, I think that I would really quickly fall back into a pattern that could be destructive to me. That being said, I mean, the simple fact that I'm able to kind of voice that concern, shows that I kind of went through the patterns and kind of know that about me. But I do enjoy kind of having a balance. I am an HR manager in an IT company, and that kind of balances things out and allows me to kind of go through a day working on different types of goals and running and things like that. And I'm also a coach, for a company in Quebec. So that also helps me kind of, work on my passion while not just running.
Yeah. Part of me is just fascinated by it. I always like to think of like, what is the next generation of athlete going to look like in the sport and what opportunities are they going to have? And I'm not exactly sure what it looks like for other athletes and other endurance sports, but like in like baseball, basketball, soccer, for example, in addition to the 2 to 3 hours they spend practicing each day, like they're in the weight room, they're with a sports psychologist, they're with a dietitian, like they have all of these other areas of their day chunked out to the other 20% of training. And I'm curious if we'll ever get to that point where there really isn't even any room for burnout because all the other areas of your day are like taken up by recovery activities and like other learning activities.
Yeah. I mean, it would be really interesting to see what I would be able to do with more times in my hands. But I also, I think it's good to have a balance in between different passions that you have in life. And I think that having a job kind of allows me to kind of stay grounded and understand that there's different things that you can, different goals that you can work towards.
I have a couple miscellaneous questions for you as we wind down. The first, are there any books, podcasts, or movies that you have consumed recently that have left a big impression on you? Maybe they've changed the way you think or see the world that would be worthwhile sharing with the audience?
I listen to a lot of podcasts actually. When I run, I listen to a lot of podcasts. I also listen to a lot of books, audiobooks when I go running. I think that's really nice to kind of combine everything. I think that one book that I always kind of go back to, and it's, I read it every once in a while, kind of like a chapter here and a chapter there. It's the book, it's called Outliers by Malcolm Gladwell. And I really like the idea of his theory that you can become anything you want if you dedicate 10,000 hours of your life to it. And I think that it's very similar to trail running in the sense of ultra trail. Shall I say, the more time you dedicate to the sport, the better you become. And I just think that it's such a good metaphor and it's such a good reminder that, to anyone who desires to improve, if you wish to commit yourself to trail running, there's no doubt that you will improve if you put in the time and the work and the effort. And I think that's something that always sticks with me. And whenever if there's ever a moment where I'm wondering like, am I doing everything in my power to be the best trail runner that I can, then I remind myself that I dedicate so much time to it. And it kind of just soothes me in the process.
If you could put a message on a billboard for all to see, what would it say and why?
Well, that's a very good one. I think that I would go with choose to be optimistic. I really like that phrase because I think that it shows that, in life is just about decisions and whatever you choose kind of bring you forward, the actions that you take and the decisions that you make. But I think that with every decision that you make, you also have the choice to add the optimism to it and kind of, so that's kind of how, that's kind of the process that helped me get through my injuries. And it's always choosing the optimistic route and telling yourself that you are going to get out of it. And that's true to trail running, but it's also true to life. And I think that more people should choose to be optimistic.
Last question here. I know that Western States is the focus, at least for the first half of 2022. Do you have any of the rest of the season planned out, or are you somebody that has like a singular focus and then you're not even thinking about anything beyond that?
Well, my focus was definitely Western States, and will remain Western States for the next couple months here. But registration for UTMB is closing on January 18th. And so that's definitely something that is crossing my mind. I am currently debating if I should be registering for the CCC or give UTMB a shot. So that's kind of what I'm thinking about. I haven't gotten to that conclusion just yet, but that's kind of the thought process that I'm going through right now.
It is really hard to nail that Western States UTMB double, but that would be pretty exciting if you went for that. CCC is fantastic too.
Yeah, I know. I know that it's a hard one to nail, but I think that, like I said earlier, it's really difficult to switch my perspective on that, just because, you know, I'm just so thankful to be able to, you know, if I run Western States and I'm able to show up to UTMB and run it, even if I'm not, you know, at the best of my capabilities, I'll just be so excited to be on the start line. And that's all that matters to me, really. It's not a question of nailing both. It's just a question of participating in both.
I dig it. Cool. Well, Marianne, it has been a pleasure to get to know you. And it's great that the American trail running scene has a chance to get to know you better as well. For anybody that wants to follow your journey to Western States these next couple months, what's the best way to get in touch and to follow you on social media?
Well, I'm on Strava. So I post most of my workouts on Strava. So just Marianne Hogan. And I also have an Instagram. I actually like to take pictures a lot. I do not claim to be a photographer, but I do like to take pictures of the runs that I'm in or just the adventures that I do. So Instagram is where I populate the pictures as well. And my handle is Marianne in Bedford because I am from the town of Bedford, Quebec.
Sweet. We will link to it all in the show notes and in the weekly newsletter. Thanks again, and maybe we can chat after Western States or UTMB.
For sure. Thanks so much for having me.
Hey, thanks for listening. I just have the same usual requests. Please consider giving us a review in Apple, a rating in Spotify, and share us on social, Instagram, Twitter, wherever you spend the most time. I know I say it all the time, but yes, it truly does help more folks discover the show. So thank you. As always, I am your host, Finn Melanson. I am grateful for your support, and I will talk to you on the next episode.